We are back with another episode of the SEC Football Hour. It is episode 3. We are so glad you have come to hang out with us, talk some SEC football today. I'm Chase Robinson. Got Chris Lee with me once again. And again, we're going to dive into all things SEC football. And we got a lot of cool things to get to today as we'll look at one big question for three teams, make or break games. Also, Callum McAndrew will join us, beat writer there for the Missouri Tigers. So we'll get some insight from Callum coming up in just a little bit as well. But first, we got to remind you about Bet Online. That is your number one source as the NBA Finals have now wrapped up. You got the Stanley Cup Finals still going as we're recording this. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to the online casino, get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of the over 150 slot games. Head over to the website to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. So, Chris, another week, another episode. That means we're a week closer to kickoff of SEC football.
We are, and this is episode 3 of this show. You're the one that puts these together. I think these are tremendous. You give me the assignments of stuff I've got to answer ahead of time. It makes me work, but that work makes me better at this. And I just think these are fun to do. I look forward to them. I cannot wait to hear your take on some of these topics you've charged me with answering.
Yeah, so let's just go ahead and dive on into it as we'll look at one big question. We're doing this for every team. We choose three every week. This week, we're going to look at one big question for Auburn, Mississippi State, and Missouri. So we'll start with the Auburn Tigers. And really, my question for Auburn this year is, can they be consistent on offense? I feel like that's been a struggle as of late, especially last year. They didn't quite have the receivers that they do this year, which I think provide a lot of inconsistency with Peyton Thorne not being able to find the guy to throw to. They've been playing multiple quarterbacks. Robbie Ashford would come in some, and so Peyton Thorne really couldn't get settled in to find some consistency. So with him being the guy this year, with them upgrading the wide receiver room, they're going to continue to have a good run game, I think, and they have as of late. I'm just wondering if they can find some consistency with all these pieces that they've got. Can they be consistent on offense? If they are, I think it could be a pretty good year for Auburn.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question. Have you been reading Lindy's by chance? Because if you look in their Auburn preview, this because I was doing some research on some things, and that was their lead. And their lead sentence was, looking back, Auburn football in 2023 is hard to figure. They go on to talk about the Georgia game, the Alabama game, getting upset by New Mexico State, you know, not showing up another game. So I don't know if that was the genesis of your question there, but the minute you started saying it, I thought, you know, I read this morning, and I think you both hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, and I think if they do that, like I said, I think this could be a good year for Auburn. So we'll have to see. But, Chris, what is your one big question for the Auburn Tigers heading into 2024?
Well, being good or being bad, it doesn't hinge on one player. But if you had to pick the closest to it, it's the quarterback. And that's the question here. Does Auburn get the 2021 version of Peyton Thorne or the Peyton Thorne we've seen the last 2 years? Now, look, 2021, he was pretty good at Michigan State, 8.3 yards per throw, 27 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Quarterbacks are supposed to get better as they get older, right? Well, his numbers at Michigan State the next year and his numbers at Auburn last year were pretty similar in terms of yards per throw, touchdowns, and interceptions. That's in two different offenses. Now, look, we can point the finger at Auburn and the receiving talent, and I think that is valid. This year, they've allegedly addressed that. And I say allegedly, I think they have. So now the question is, what Peyton Thorne do we get? Is it one that was 8.3 per throw, 27 touchdowns, 10 picks, 2021, or the one that's been 6.8 yards per throw, 35 touchdowns, 21 picks since?
Yeah, and I think it's going to help. And I'll say this. I was always questioning why they didn't just putting Peyton Thorne in and letting him do his thing and not keep rotating him out with Robbie Ashford and let him get in a groove. I think that's going to help this year with, and I know there's other guys in the quarterback room, but it appears that Peyton Thorne is the guy. There's no competition. There's not going to be going back and forth. And I feel like he can get back to those good numbers if he's the guy and they leave him in and just trust him to do his thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And again, playing for an offensive-minded coach, had a year to assess the situation, make some changes. Everybody knows with Brian Harsin, it wasn't an ideal spot. So I think you had some built-in excuses last year that may not be here this year.
Yeah, I certainly agree. So that's one big question for the Auburn Tigers. Now let's move to Mississippi State team. I feel like there's a lot of questions about right now. Chris, what is your one big question on the Mississippi State Bulldogs?
Well, look, New was good, and State has not had a lot of choice in this. The Mike Leach passing obviously set off a series of dominoes. They probably went too quickly to go to Zach Arnett, but you can understand why they did it. And so now you get Jeff Lebby. And look, they were not very good last year. Offensively, they were awful. We all remember that Arkansas game that was more like a baseball score, except I think baseball teams score more than those two teams did last year. And that was just kind of put it out in front of everybody. Like, this is not anything close to what Mike Leach was running offensively. Now, defensively, had a couple linebackers and Watson and Johnson who had been there forever, and they did okay there at times. But it was kind of a reboot start to finish. And my question is there too much new to expect success in year one for Jeff Lebby? Now, it's not just the changing in the coaching staff, but I'm looking at Lindy's on the depth chart today. Zero returning starters on offense. Now, they had guys that started other places. I get that. And I think it was one or two on one on defense, one returning starter. And that's a lot of change. That is a lot of change. Hard to manage that if you're Georgia, getting anybody and everybody you want, much less at Mississippi State. So I think is there too much new and too much adjustment to expect much in year one for Jeff Lebby in Mississippi State?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And mine actually kind of goes along with that. But my question for Mississippi State is, how long is it going to take to gel? Because you've got a new quarterback, you've got a whole new receiving room. You mentioned there's no returning starters on offense. There's one returning on defense. They're going to have all summer and they're going to have fall camp together, but there's nothing like playing in a game together with guys you've never played with before. And so how long is it going to take the coaching staff to gel with the players, to gel with each other? How long is it going to take for Blake Shapen, a quarterback, to get together with his receivers and his backs? Like, the defensive guys communicating, how long is it going to take for a team of all new guys to gel? For Mississippi State, hopefully it's not very long and they can get rolling. But I think that's a big question for me is how long will it take for this team to gel? We'll find out soon enough there for Jeff Lebby and the Mississippi State Bulldogs. We'll move now to our third team. That is the Missouri Tigers. One big question for Missouri for me: will their defense continue to be elite? Last year, they had a terrific defense. That's what kept them in a lot of games, and they had a great offense to go along with it. But even if the offense was struggling, their defense did a great job. And, I mean, you think back to even the Ohio State game in there in the Cotton Bowl, the defense was just lights out in that game. So can their defense continue to be elite? If they do, I think it could be another successful year for Missouri. What is your one big question on the Tigers?
Well, responding to yours, I think that's a great question. And let's not forget how bad Missouri was defensively a couple of years ago. I remember that game where Tennessee scored 60-something points. Felt like it could have been 160-something.
Yeah.
And then Blake Baker comes in, does his magic. They were pretty good last year. He's now at LSU. So that's a difference. They bring back a lot of guys, but that's, you know, they did lose some guys on defense and a coordinator. So the architect of turning it around is now gone. And I think that's another subset of that question you asked. But here's mine. What does Missouri do as the hunted, Chase? Because I felt going in, there were receipts on this, I felt Missouri was the team that people were kind of sleeping on. But because Missouri is not a name, I think people were hesitant to jump on board. Because say you pick Missouri to, you know, finish second or third in the East or whatever, if you're wrong, you look like an idiot. So nobody was really giving Missouri a lot of run going into the season yet. And if you're looking closely, you could say, I could see the pieces here. But I think that was the case across the board. Like, teams probably aren't circling Missouri as a key game a year ago. You saw what happened to Tennessee last year. That game got, you know, that one's going to be spicy when those two teams play again. But here's the thing, Chase. Last year, they did it under the radar. And I don't think anybody realized how good Missouri was till the season was pretty much over. Won't be that this year. There's playoff expectations. It is different going into a season and the games as the hunted. And how does Missouri do with the target on its back? Because it's been a while since that's been the case.
It has been a while. And, you know, we see teams fold under expectations. So we'll have to see how Missouri handles these expectations. Speaking of the Missouri Tigers, Callum McAndrew does a great job. He is on the Missouri beat there for the Columbia Tribune newspaper there in Columbia, Missouri, and is reports on the Missouri Tigers. I had a chance to catch up with him earlier this week to preview the season for the Missouri Tigers. So here is my conversation with Callum McAndrew of the Columbia Tribune. And we're going to talk some Missouri football now here on the SEC Football Hour. Callum McAndrew joins us, and we're going to dive into things Tigers here. Callum, first of all, appreciate you hopping on. And, man, what an exciting time, I know, for you getting to cover Missouri football, really the Missouri fan base after last year.
No kidding. Kind of came out of nowhere there a little bit. I don't think most people expected them to have the year that they did last season. And they've kind of kept that run going for the last few months here out on the trail and with a little bit of momentum heading into next season. So should be a fun one on deck.
Yeah, going back to last year, I mean, is that something that people expected? Hey, you know, when you go back to the beginning of last year, you say, oh, this is a team that could hit 10 wins, win a Cotton Bowl against Ohio State. I mean, did people think that?
No. I mean, locally, I mean, you know, when I was fielding questions sort of this time last year, the more common question wasn't, hey, can they win 9-10 games? Can they go to a New Year's Six Bowl? It was, hey, how hot is Eli Drinkwitz's seat right now? You know, they just brought in an offensive coordinator to take away the play calling duties from him and Kirby Moore. They had some questions still lingering there. They had a quarterback competition heading into the season, you know, which seems so far away at this point, you know, nearly 12 months down the line. But there were a lot of questions around them, and they were looking at, hey, another 500 year, another mediocre bowl, another mediocre bowl loss. And suddenly you're starting to think, well, it's been 4 years of Eli Drinkwitz, and we haven't really seen that much of an uptick in on-field production and on-field results. And then, yeah, they blew that out of the water. So, no, the common consensus was not that they were going to go beat Ohio State in Dallas. I can tell you that at this time last year.
Well, heading into this year, obviously some guys are gone, but there's a great roster coming into this year. And you mentioned Brady Cook at quarterback, had a great season last year, leading the team. Cody Schrader had a fantastic year last year. He's gone, but they've gone into the portal, got a couple of running backs. Talk about that running back room this year for the Tigers.
Well, the key there is, I mean, we'll never see, at least I don't think I'll ever see another college football story like Cody Schrader's. I mean, that was just unbelievable. For those that don't know, played Division II football about 2 hours up the road from Columbia, Missouri, at a place called Truman State. Came in, walked onto the team, didn't get a scholarship offer really. He was buried on that depth chart, and came into the team and just worked his way up all the way to, I think he was eighth place in Heisman voting at the end of the year after 1,600 rushing yards. So, the incredible story. Their task now is finding a way to replace those yards because he's off to the 49ers as an undrafted free agent. So, they've gone and got Marcus Carroll from Georgia State. They went and got Nate Noel from Appalachian State, which was Drinkwitz's old stomping grounds. And it seems right now you've got Carroll, who's more of a sort of big bustling back. He's going to run downhill quite a lot. You've got Nate Noel, who's a little bit more tricky, a little bit more shifty from what we've seen in spring camp so far. So we'll see what they go with. They're not averse to going with two. They did it a few years ago with Tyler Beatty and Larry Roundtree, kind of that sort of thunder and lightning situation. They have to find those yards somewhere because the game was so reliant on a great running game last year, and they were so effective at doing it and punishing teams by running them into the ground. So if they can find a way to manage those two, they've got a few guys behind them, but I would expect these two senior transfers to take the bulk of the reps there. You know, they look on paper like two good running backs, two good replacements. So we'll see how they use them as we get more into fall camp. They haven't made a decision yet.
And as far as wide receivers go, Luther Burden, a guy a lot of folks hear his name a lot. And as far as other wide receivers go, it looks like there's a pretty good receiver room for Missouri this year.
This, to me, is probably their strongest all-round room that they have on the team this season. You know, you've got your three main stars back. They've got their all six players that caught a pass for them last year are back. They've got a couple guys that are a little bit further down the line in their progression after coming in as freshmen last year that look a little bit better. So they've just got options in abundance there. You know, you've got Burden, who, I mean, he's probably a top 10 draft pick next year coming out of his junior season. You've got Theo wide receiver, that's a pretty decent place to play. And they've got a lot of young guys. Marquise Johnson had a great season last year. I think he had a 10.1 second 100-meter time in high school. He's just fast as all get out. They used him really effectively last year, sparingly but effectively. And they've got, you know, 7-8 guys that genuinely could take reps for them. But that core that they have really is it's great for Brady Cook to have those guys back. It's great for them to have Brady Cook back another year down the line in Kirby Moore's scheme. And that looks like a really strong room on paper.
Yeah, and Brady, as far as Brady Cook goes, what is it that the coaching staff likes about Brady Cook? What is, and I know he's worked great with Kirby Moore, like you mentioned, and that was a great hire by Eli Drinkwitz to bring him in. But what do the coaches like about Brady Cook and what he brings to the team?
Missouri obsessed. Is the first one there. I mean, he's from St. Louis. He was a Missouri fan growing up. Just committed to the team and consistency. I mean, you saw it, you know, his first year starter had some ups and downs, but that was battling through a shoulder injury, tore his labrum in his shoulder in the second game, and they just didn't really have anyone else to go to after that, and he played through the injury. They liked that toughness from him. He came back, went into another quarterback competition when he was the incumbent starter, won again, and came out and he broke the SEC record for passes without an interception. He had a fantastic season. He really connected so much better with Luther Burden than he did the year before. Theo always really, really helped him in his progression there, having that second option at the X. Cody Schrader and were unstoppable at times in the running game. They really complemented each other so well with Cook's legs. So toughness, consistency, and really just a true leader for them.
I want to flip over to the defensive side of the ball. Some changes there on defense. New defensive coordinator Corey Batoon will come in as Baker departed for LSU. What does Batoon bring as a defensive coordinator, and what changes have been made to that side of the ball?
So it doesn't look like they're going to flip the defense's identity from what it was under Blake Baker. It's interesting timing because, you know, they bring in Baker. They have two top 35 defenses in a row. They really were good at getting into the opponent's quarterback's faces. They were really good at bringing pressure. You saw it against the State where they gave those, I mean, it was their backups, but they gave them hell all day long, really. I mean, it just held Ohio State to 3 points and really didn't look like ever forfeiting anything else there. So you're bringing in this new guy. A lot of guys have, and you look at who's leaving that defense, Ennis Rakes or Chris Drayton, Darius Robinson, a first round, or Tyrone Hopper, Jalen Carlisle. All these guys are starters. And then even more just in their sort of, they're too deep there are gone as well. So there are a lot of questions there. But for that returning core that is coming, for the transfers that are coming in, they are keeping the 4-2-5 identity. They're keeping some of the intricacies of the defense, playing with sort of a star nickel hybrid running back safety there in Dalen Carnell. They're keeping that position. They're keeping their same defensive front. They're keeping sort of the same base packages that they have there from what we can tell. I'm sure when we see a little bit more in fall camp, we'll see more of the imprint that Batoon wants to bring. But in its essence, I think they're trying to keep that element of consistency heading into the new season, because they are kind of putting their chips all in on this year.
Yeah, and looking at the schedule, I mean, it's you know, you look at the SEC, and it's not that anybody has an easy schedule. There's teams on there that are going to be a challenge every week. But when you look up and down the schedule, I feel like it plays in the favor of Missouri if they want to make this 12-team playoff.
Absolutely. You know, I was, you know, just kind of going through some numbers the other day. And I think, you know, when you're looking at schedules, like you say, it's never going to be easy. It's the SEC. They're going to have tough games. And, you know, they had so many games that were one score games go in their favor last year that you can't read into it too much. You never really know what other teams are going to look like until they get out there. But they either play a team on Faroe Field in a non-conference game, a team they beat last year, or a team with a new head coach. And when you're asking for something, that is as favorable as it gets. You know, you go to Texas A&M and Alabama, two games that are going to be incredibly difficult road tests, but we really don't know what those teams are going to look like until they head out with their new head coaches. So it sets up nicely for them. That's why I think they're throwing their chips all in on this season. They've really pounded the transfer portal. They've really hit the recruiting. They brought as many guys back as they could for another year when they didn't have to come back for another year because it sets up so favorably for them. And this really does seem like a chance with the expanded playoff to be one of those top 12 teams.
Has the coaching staff seen maybe an uptick in recruiting since last season, since the success they've had?
It's been trending in the right direction. You know, back in April, they didn't have anyone in the class of 25. And first guy they get is a 4-star. I think On3 has him as a 5-star. Matt Zoller is the quarterback, one of the top quarterbacks in his class. And since that, they've really had sort of a snowball effect there. They've had quite a few more. Last week, they brought in three guys, 2 4-stars and a 3-star safety. They're up to 10 now. They have a big recruiting weekend this weekend where they'll have a majority of the people they're targeting on campus this weekend. They are trying to capitalize on that. Their average star ranking for what that's worth on paper is looking a little bit higher. You know, to be able to go to Pennsylvania and grab one of the top quarterbacks in the country is a major grab for them, and something I'm not sure happens if you don't beat an Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl.
And, you know, for some SEC fans who have never been to Columbia, Missouri to watch a game, that's a tough place to play. We've seen that year in and year out since Missouri has joined the SEC. Give us a little glimpse of what it's like on a Saturday there in Columbia, Missouri.
Oh, it's always a fun time. I mean, they really lucked out last year. I think I remember telling someone, I think they bought the weather last year. It was just absolutely perfect. It's a fun time. Columbia's I've lived here for nearly 4 years now. Game days, you know, since the teams got a little bit better, the atmosphere got a little bit better as well. It's funny how those things kind of coordinate. It's a good time. There's plenty of good spots to stop and stay in Como.
Callum McAndrew covers the Missouri Tigers. Man, really appreciate you coming on, talking some Missouri football with us. We'll do it again soon, but appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much, Chase.
And appreciate Callum McAndrew taking a few minutes with me earlier this week, talking some Missouri football, and we talked about our one big question for Missouri. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the Tigers do. And like you mentioned, Chris, kind of going into the season with a target on their back. So that is, we again appreciate Callum McAndrew for joining us here on the SEC Football Hour. We'll shift now to, I think this is one of my favorite segments we do, of Who Said This. We'll share a quote from either a current or former SEC head football coach, and the other will try to guess who said that. So, Chris, I'll let you go first with your quote. Let's hear it.
Yeah, these have been so much fun. I mean, we could just do Steve Spurrier quotes alone. And I'll give you one hint. Today's answer is not Steve Spurrier. That's the only hint I'm going to give you. Although you may know this. Here's the quote. I make my practices real hard because if a player is a quitter, I want him to quit in practice, not in a game.
Let's see.
Also, not a transfer portal era quote, by the way. You may have already guessed that.
Yeah. Let's see. I make my practices hard. I'm going to go Philip Fulmer.
It's not Philip Fulmer. It was a very successful coach. Not a lot of coaches had more success than Philip Fulmer, but this guy did. It's the legendary Bear Bryant.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a Bear Bryant
Junction
quote
Boys. Remember that?
Yes, absolutely. That was a good one. Yeah. I feel like I don't want to give it away. I feel like mine, I'm kind of throwing you a softball maybe. All right, here is my quote. Who said this? I'm a history teacher by trade, and every time I come to one of these meetings, I'm blown away that 13 colonies actually formed a union, but we can't agree on 8 or 9 game schedule.
I heard this one the other day, and this is the part where I probably outthink myself, or maybe I don't. One more time.
I'm a history teacher by trade, and every time I come to one of these meetings, I'm blown away that the 13 colonies actually formed a union, but we can't agree on an 8 or 9 game schedule.
Man, that should be easy. A history teacher by trade. That kind of lays it out for me, but not. I'm blanking. Eli Drinkwitz.
Yes.
Oh,
got it right. That's why I thought maybe this one was a little too easy, because there's very few SEC football coaches who have come from the high school ranks, him being one of those. He was a history teacher and a high school football coach, and now at Missouri. I thought, and I wasn't, when I planned for this quote, I had not planned to talk so much Missouri football on the show. And so, great job. I think that's the first one we've guessed in our 3 episodes. So congratulations. So,
sometimes you throw a Hail Mary and there's a guy down there to receive the tip. So
that is who said this. We do that every week here on the SEC Football Hour. Well, transfer portal is, the last few years has become one of the prime topics in really all of college sports, but college football. You got the windows of time, the spring window now closed. Teams have gone out, got who they needed out of the portal. And so we're going to talk a couple of winners and losers. Each of us have a winner. Each of us have a loser in the transfer portal for 2024. And Chris, I'll let you go first on your winner. Who do you have as a winner in the transfer portal in 2024?
Well, this is taking the easy way out, but when your nickname is the Portal King, you probably won in the portal, and boy, did Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss win in the portal. Just names that you know all over the place. You know, start of the secondary, Brandon Turnage from Tennessee, Trey Amos, Alabama, Keyshawn Lawrence, Oklahoma, I believe, was where he was last. You got Chris Paul at Arkansas, who's been a fixture at linebacker. But and Juice Wells, who was, one of the best 2 or 3 receivers coming in the league last year before health hurt. He did lose Quinshon Judkins, but you got 3 running backs who will go by committee who are all pretty respectable at the least. But here's where the difference was made for me, Chase. Ole Miss got gashed a lot of times. Like the trenches was where it hasn't always worked for them. They get left guard Nate, I guess it's Kalepo from Washington. Everybody knows about that offensive line. But I think the bigger part was on the defensive line. It has been a while since you looked at Ole Miss, probably a decade since, when Hugh Freeze had it rolling there, that you said, all right, these guys have got stud defensive linemen. You got Walter Nolan from Texas A&M, one of the most gifted linemen in the country, and Prince of U from Florida. I'm going to botch the last name, so I'm not even going to try, but you know who he is.
Yeah.
One of the Gators' better players. I think to me, they got a lot of dudes. When they started adding guys in the trenches, that really got my attention.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. And that kind of goes kind of the same reason I chose my winner. I chose Oklahoma as a winner in the transfer portal based on what they did on both the offensive and the defensive lines, kind of redid them. And I think that's going to help, especially offensively, with a lot of new guys, a lot of bigger guys. They went for the bigger offensive linemen to help protect Jackson Arnold and those guys around him. They also went and got some receivers like Deion Burks. I think he'll be one of the best receivers in the SEC by the end of the year. He's going to get a lot of touches there for the Sooners. But and on the defensive line as well, they went out and got bigger. And I think that's going to help. They had to when you get into the SEC. I mean, Again, they've been playing really good football. I'm not going to take that away from them in the Big 12, but you get to the SEC when these teams do have bigger lines on both sides of the ball. So Oklahoma did what they needed to do and kind of beef up the offensive and defensive lines to help as they enter the SEC. So I've got the Oklahoma Sooners as my winner there in the transfer portal. All right, Chris, who would you say is a loser in the transfer portal following this past year?
But by the way, like your Oklahoma pick, we did a show, and I think one of the topics that came up was they had lost like 11,000 career snaps on the offensive line. So you better get some experience. So good job there by the Sooners. My loser is Alabama. And I know Alabama had some guys, but you lose a lot of your targets in Isaiah Bond, who had the biggest reception of the season last year. Amari Nyblack, really good tight end. They lost running back Roydell Williams, who started the SEC title game. No, look, I know they got talented guys, but those are some losses. And they even lost Caden Proctor temporarily before they got him back. But they lost some time with Caden Proctor. Like, you'd rather have a guy for spring practice than not, especially when you got a coaching change. But I think the biggest one was Caleb Downs. That was one that you're kind of shocked. Alabama has been so good at putting defensive backs in the NFL that losing a guy that was, you know, playing at like an All-American level as a freshman, that was the one. They all hurt, but that was the one that I thought really hurt. He's going to be a little hard to replace. I just think the losses came pretty heavily for Alabama in some spots.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll get to mine in a second, but just to comment on that, I mean, you look at how Alabama has handled the transfer portal in the past. They've never obviously had this many guys leave because it's a new coach. But Nick Saban kind of went with the quality over quantity, you know, in the transfer portal. He may not have got a lot of guys, but he got some really good guys out of the portal. And Alabama was just in a situation where there wasn't a lot of quality guys. They had to go for quantity, but still it didn't quite match up. And it all, again, a lot has to do with the new coach. But this, I think, was one of the most interesting years for Alabama as far as the transfer portal goes.
Yeah, for sure.
So here is I've got LSU as my loser in the transfer portal. They didn't utilize it much. They lost 27 guys to the portal, and they got 9 guys out of the portal. And I just mentioned quality over quantity, and you may say, well, Brian Kelly may have been going for just quality guys. Well, there's not that many, you know, quality big name guys that he did get out of the portal. He got a few that he needed, but I feel like he didn't use it as I think he could have, especially, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. Yes, they brought in some defensive guys that are going to help greatly to improve that Tigers defense, but I feel like more could have been done out of the portal to make this LSU team better.
Well, hey, look, when you lose your record-setting Heisman Trophy-winning quarterback and 2 first-round receivers – and again, not that LSU doesn't have talent, that it's recruited, that it can develop, and especially a quarterback where you got Garrett Nussmeier, who's a really good one. But that's what you really need when you lose guys in the portal and you lose dudes to the draft. You better hit it big in the portal, and maybe we'll see if not doing that was problematic.
Yeah, we will find out very soon whether that was or not. So that's some winners and losers out of the transfer portal. Again, a lot of teams using it greatly. A lot of SEC teams bringing in some really great guys. That's just who we think some winners and losers there in the transfer portal. Let's move to likely or unlikely. We're going to throw out a couple of scenarios, and we'll see if they're likely or unlikely. I'll go first, Chris. Would you say this is likely or unlikely? The Tennessee Vols finish as a top 5 SEC team in 2020.
Okay, we're talking in the standings, not power rankings. Right. So the schedule at Oklahoma, at Arkansas, at Georgia, at Vandy, those are your 4 road games. I would say you get Vandy off the top. You get Arkansas probably off the top. Let's say you lose Oklahoma at Georgia. You're looking at 2-2. Your home games are Florida, Alabama, Kentucky, Mississippi State. Well, look, I think they're getting all those. but maybe Alabama, and they might get that one. But let's say you give them Oklahoma just for fun and give them a loss to Alabama. Say those are 50-50 games. That's 6-2. Surely that gets you inside the top five, right?
It could.
I wish I could hedge my bets and go 5.5. But that's not how this works. Sure, why not?
Okay. I mean, I think it's possible. Like, yeah, if they're as good as, and I think there's a lot to learn because there's some younger guys like Nico, quarterback. I mean, we don't know exactly how he's going to do in a starting role, but if they're as good as a lot of people think they could be, I think they certainly could be a top five team, finish out in the top five. So you go likely there. All right, here's another one. Likely or unlikely, Jalen Milroe is a Heisman finalist.
Well, we all know Heisman is about a lot of things, including does your team win enough games to be relevant? I mean, unless you're Tim Tebow, or if you want to go way back, Paul Hornung. But those are the exceptions to the rule. Okay, they've got to handle Georgia at home, Tennessee on the road, which we just talked about, at LSU, at Oklahoma, not to mention Auburn and Missouri. But you know, I believe, and I know I'm not addressing your question directly, but I'm going to get there. I'm a big believer in Kalen DeBoer. So I'm going to say Alabama's relevant. And if Alabama's relevant, its quarterback's going to be relevant. And he had a pretty good run-up in his first season as a starter. Felt like it got better. I'll buy.
Okay. I mean, I think he could be, especially in this offense. I mean, Kalen DeBoer is going to stretch him as a quarterback. I mean, we saw Jalen Milroe, kind of his arm get better as the year went on last year, but he's going to have to utilize that a lot this year and put in some different situations. So I think if Kalen DeBoer can do to Jalen Milroe what he's done with past quarterbacks that he's had, I think he certainly could be. So, yeah, we'll see. But that's my likely or unlikely. All right, Chris, give them to me.
Okay, you started with the Tennessee question. I'm also going to go with the Tennessee question. I wanted to do one around a player and one around a team. So we'll start with the player, and that is Nico Iamaliva. Hendon Hooker had 3,561 yards of total offense his first year under Josh Heupel's system and had a number very close to that, I think within 50 yards in his second year. Of course, he missed a couple of games. Now, he played all 13 games, I believe, in 2022. But if you remember, Joe Milton was the starter to start the season. It took a minute for him to get that job. Why is that relevant? I'm trying to give you context for these numbers, for the question I'm asking. Nico, does he get over the total of 3,561 yards that Hendon Hooker had in his first year? Now, Hooker, again, more experienced, but only played 11 total games that year. Buying or not?
That's tough. I'm going to go unlikely.
Yeah.
Because we just haven't seen him. I mean, he's we've seen bits and pieces of them, but a starting role at an SEC school is different than anything he's ever done before. I think it's going to take some time for him to be able to put up those kind of numbers. Just because, I mean, you look at their schedule. You mentioned Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia. I mean, he's going to be playing some really good defenses. And,
yeah,
you know, I may be eating my words, you know, come November when he's just throwing it all over the yard. But right now I'm going to say unlikely just because he's unproven. Like, we don't know how he's going to handle all this. I think he's a good quarterback. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, can we buy into this in his first year as a starter? I don't think so. I'm going to go unlikely.
Well, and there's also the case where he's a mobile guy and quarterbacks take hits. And, you know, part of the probabilities he gets hurt first drive. It's very unlikely, but you know that's on the, if you played a million seasons, there's going to be some point where he's out for the year in a few of those. So that's part of it. Number two, the bar was awfully high, and they had a lot of talent. They had a Biletnikoff winner when Hendon Hooker did that. Now, the counterpoint to all that would be that those guys were not known commodities coming into that year, and the system made them that good.
Yeah.
And the counterpoint also would have been that Nico Iamaliva is regarded as a better talent coming into the season than Hooker was there. That system, I'm not going to say the system made Hooker, but the raw material coming in was perceived to be better. That's why I think it's an interesting question, because I think the situation is interesting. And obviously he came in with a lot of hype, and that is a really high bar. But Josh Heupel has kind of gotten used to clearing some pretty high bars with his offenses too.
Yeah, I think so. And Hendon Hooker was such a special guy. I think he's one of those guys that you see every once in a while. Like, that's just his story, how he got there, the season he had. Like, he was just a special guy, and you don't get a lot of those. And so I think what we saw from him was just really special in 2022, what he was able to do.
Well, and here's the other reason I asked. I'm glad you said that, Chase, because part of special is the leadership and the chemistry with your teammates. Hendon Hooker was, by everybody's account, a great dude. And that's been the same kind of talk about Nico Iamaliva since even before he showed up on campus. Was he kind of had Joe Milton's back, and that was a difficult situation to navigate. If you're a prima donna, that could have easily blown up. If you're a locker room cancer, that could have easily blown up. I think part of what works in Nico Iamaliva's favor is there not a self-destruct element that you see with players that can blow that up. And I think that's one reason I do think he's got a chance, is because I think the character and the leadership element will supplement the talent.
Yeah. And that goes a long way. I mean, and like you said, from all reports, I mean, we don't know Hendon Hooker, but from what everybody said, he was that fantastic leader, and that goes a long way. So we'll see if that's the way for Nico.
All right. Next up, we've touched on LSU a couple times. I'm looking through my Lindy's, and LSU is picked sixth in the conference in Lindy's. I'll give you my thinking on this later, because I don't want to bias yours, but is it likely or unlikely that the Tigers finish better than sixth?
Let's see. So you've got Georgia, we know, is going to be in the top six. Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, Missouri, LSU, Tennessee, who we were just talking about. And then you look at the LSU schedule. Let's see. They've got Ole Miss at home.
It's not the worst.
No. I'm gonna say, you said that they are in the top six.
Well, they were pick six. The question is, do they beat that or not?
I'm going to say likely. Okay. I'm going to say they're a top five SEC team based off what I see on their schedule and the games they have at home. I think they can finish. I think they can finish top five.
Yeah, and I think the value in these questions is not really the answer. It's the thinking of why you asked the question and how you answered. I think they're an interesting case for a few reasons. First of all, that's a high bar, top five in the conference. And Alabama might not finish top five in the conference. We just bet they would, but who knows? Bad break or two, and they don't. I think back to 2 years ago. Was anybody talking about LSU as an SEC West title contender?
No.
No, they were not. That's point number one. Point number two, Brian Kelly's floor as a coach. I mean, let's go back. 2017 at Notre Dame, they go 10-3. 2018, 12-1. 2019, 11-2. 2020, 10-2. Rose Bowl. 2021, 11-1. Fiesta Bowl. 2022 at LSU, 10-4. Better than anybody expected. 2023, 10-3, and kind of a down year. Here's my point. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight seasons with 10 wins or more. Now, Brian Kelly's never won the big one, and that's kind of how we judge coaches, but that floor consistency is remarkable. Now, I like the question that you asked earlier in the show, or when we talked about the transfer portal, because you pointed out they got some holes, and they lost, seemed to have lost more than they brought in. But Brian Kelly's got a history of getting his teams right up there, and history suggests to me that they're going to be a top five team, even if you can't map it out in the preseason.
Yeah, I think that's a great case for that. And I mean, again, you look at their schedule. It obviously the SEC, we talked about schedules last week. There's not really a easy schedule per se, but you know, you look, they have to go to South Carolina, to Arkansas, to A&M, to Florida. Three of those road games are against teams, or two of those, Florida and Arkansas, who there's a lot of heat on those two teams this year.
Yeah.
A&M is always a battle with LSU, but you get Ole Miss at home, you get Alabama at home, you get Vandy at home, you get Oklahoma at home. You start the season off against USC, who has not played well against SEC opponents, and I think LSU is the better team in that one. So you look up and down the schedule. I mean, this is a good schedule for this LSU team, where there are some holes. You know, they got to improve on defense. There's no doubt about it. Garrett Nussmeyer's, I think, is a good quarterback and will do well. But, I could see this LSU team, and I agree with your point there. You think back to 22, and no one was really expecting this LSU team to do what they did, and yet Brian Kelly was able to exceed those expectations. Brian Kelly's a good coach, and so I think with those points that you've made, yeah, I think they could be a top-five team. And some people, I think, would have them in the playoffs.
Yeah, and here's one more thing. Okay, I'm looking at Lindy's. Five teams in front of them. They don't play number one, Georgia. They don't play, and I'm looking to my side to check the schedule, make them right. Don't play number two, Texas. Ole Miss, number three in there. They do play Ole Miss, but that's in Baton Rouge. Number four, Alabama. Do play Alabama. That's in Baton Rouge. Number five, Missouri. Not on the schedule. And oh, by the way, right behind him, number seven, Tennessee. Don't play the Vols. You miss a lot of the big teams on that schedule.
Yep. And the ones you do, you got them at home.
You get it.
We remember last time Alabama went to Baton Rouge, and LSU has beaten Ole Miss there in Baton Rouge as well. So, I mean, yeah, I like the Tigers' chances for sure. That was a really good, really good scenario there, Chris. So we'll roll in now to our make or break, our final segment here. Make or break games for three teams. We'll start with the Oklahoma Sooners. What do you think their make or break game is this year, Chris?
Okay, I put a lot of emphasis on schedule order and sequencing as we do this, as people that have watched this a couple times may figure out. Okay, Oklahoma starts its season. Temple, bottom five team in the FBS, will be a win. Next up, Houston. Houston's down. Predicted among the bottom teams, maybe at the bottom of the Big 12. Tulane, Willie Fritz is gone. Not expected to be the Tulane of the last couple years. So, Oklahoma's going to be heavily favored to start 3-0. And then what's in week four? Tennessee in Norman. Lot of pressure to win that game, because at that point, all your road games are ahead, as well as most of your tougher games. That is one that if Oklahoma wants to get to the playoff and get have an Oklahoma-like season, I think that's one you got to win.
Yeah,
and will tell us a lot about how good that team is or isn't.
Yeah, that's a really good point there. I'm going to go with the game after that one, the first road trip of the year for Oklahoma at Auburn. This is one of those games that you're in Jordan-Hare Stadium, which is a super tough place to play in Auburn. It's your first SEC road game. You've had Tennessee the last week. It's at home. Like you said, that's going to be a tough, really make or break game for Oklahoma. But then your first road trip at Auburn. This is one of those games I see, you know, even if Oklahoma's favored, Auburn's got it at home. Crazy things happen at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Yeah. If you're Oklahoma, you got to win this one. Not only because it's your first road trip, but looking at the games to come, you've got Texas a couple of weeks after that, and they have a bye week between Auburn and Texas. But you've got Texas, you've got Ole Miss, Missouri, Alabama, and LSU, and South Carolina all left on your SEC schedule. That's tough. They've got a very tough schedule. So with this game at Auburn, yes, it's on the road. You've played Tennessee, but you really got to win this one because it's tough going the rest of the way out. You don't want to drop a game like this against Auburn when you have Texas, Alabama, LSU, and Missouri left on your schedule if you want a shot at the playoffs.
I feel like Auburn's always a good placeholder is a swing game pick because it's like the thing on the SEC YouTube channel that's so funny where they've got the Auburn experience. It's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
I mean, if they didn't nail that as Auburn in a nutshell, I don't know what does. So yeah, I think that's a solid. Auburn's always a good placeholder if you don't have another good starting point.
Yeah, that's a good point there. So that's our make or break game for Oklahoma. We'll move to the Vanderbilt Commodores. What would you say, Chris, is a make or break game for Vandy this year?
Well, I think you had a few candidates, but here is why I picked South Carolina at home November 9th. Vanderbilt has been dominating that series. I think the last time Vanderbilt won a game, and they played every year in that series, was 2008. But that looks to be one of the easier conference wins on their schedule. And they've got to beat somebody in the conference at some point, or Clark Lee doesn't keep his job. I don't think he can go 0-8 in the SEC. So I think, to me, if you look at where Carolina is in the preseason polls, and look, Athlon's got South Carolina at 13. 14 is Arkansas, 15 is Mississippi State. Vanderbilt does not play either one of those, and, of course, Vanderbilt is 16. So the pundits would say that might be Vanderbilt's best chance at a win. Oh, by the way, that's in Nashville, which, you know, isn't really a home field advantage, but it's not playing in front of 80-something, 90,000 at Williams-Brice either. So that's going to be a big point, I think, in Clark Lee's season. If they have not gotten a conference win, I don't know that he keeps his job if he can't get that one, because they got LSU and Tennessee next.
That's the same game I have as a make or break for Vanderbilt as well, kind of along the same lines. I was looking up and down the schedule. Their SEC games at Missouri. They host Alabama. They go to Kentucky. Texas comes to Nashville at Auburn, and then South Carolina. And then you mentioned at LSU and then Tennessee. South Carolina's, I mean, the game on there, they have to circle like, this is our day. This is our game to win, because, and we talked again about schedules last week. This is a tough schedule for Vanderbilt. And with Alabama, with Texas, LSU, Auburn, Tennessee, all on that schedule, and teams we've talked about could be, you know, top five, top six teams. So yeah, I think that South Carolina game is going to be huge, and having that in Nashville will be good as well for Vanderbilt. So we went with the same one there for the Commodores. Now for Tennessee, Chris, what is your make or break game for the Vols?
I've got Alabama at home on October 19th. We know about Alabama's recent domination of that series under Nick Saban, and we also know about maybe the game of the year in college football in 22 when Tennessee knuckleballs, I guess, a field goal over the uprights to get an upset in one of the most fun college football games you will ever watch. But sometimes, you know, a lot of stuff happens once and then it doesn't happen again. I think if Tennessee gets a win here against Alabama, you could make the case at that point in the season, you know, the schedule to that point is not prohibitive. They got some tough games with NC State. You know, Florida's always just, you know, even when you think Tennessee's clearly better, Florida's won that game at times. But let's give Tennessee some benefit of the doubt. Let's say that they've, you know, maybe run the table or got one loss. That Alabama game has got big implications for the season and the playoff, but it's also got some of those program vibes that you need in recruiting of, hey, we have moved to a different place as a program. Now we've beaten Alabama the last two times. It's been in Knoxville. I think this one's a big one for so many reasons.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I went with their SEC opener at Oklahoma. Now, I didn't go with the Tennessee. When we talked about Oklahoma, I didn't go with Tennessee. But I am going to go with Oklahoma in this one because if Tennessee wants a shot, and again, we're talking four, maybe five SEC teams getting the 12-team playoff. If Tennessee wants a shot at that, going on the road to Oklahoma, where, I mean, there's a lot of storylines in this game. Josh Heupel obviously played at Oklahoma. He was an assistant at Oklahoma. Now he's taking his team to Norman to play. There's going to be a lot going on with this game. And so, and you look at the rest of their schedule, and you mentioned Alabama, that's going to be a tough one, even though it's in Knoxville. They have to go to Georgia as well. If you lose more than two games, you're not going to the playoff. You're not going to be in the SEC championship. And so I think it's going to be really big for Tennessee to start SEC playoff with a win on the road at Oklahoma, just in case they were to drop another one or a couple of more. They're still solidified in a position where they could go to the playoff. But you got to start out with a win.
I think your answer may be better than mine, and it's interesting. We both kind of cited factors around the game, you know, the rivalry factor with Alabama, and of course Josh Heupel's homecoming, which I completely glossed over. I think I like your answer better than mine, but I'm glad that's why we don't compare these ahead of time, so we come up with different stuff, and I think it's more interesting that way.
Yeah, I agree with that, but that's make or break games for the Sooners, Commodores, and the Vols here on the SEC Football Hour. That will put a wrap on our show for this week. And we do this show in conjunction with all the other great content that we put out as far as SEC football. We're going through all of the schedules right now for all the SEC teams. So you can check that out on the Southeastern 14 YouTube channel as we're previewing all the schedules. We'll be doing team previews coming up as we get closer to the season. And, of course, great content all throughout the season as well. But we bring you the SEC Football Hour every week here on Southeastern 14, and we appreciate you for hanging out. It's been fun once again, Chris, talking some SEC football.
Oh, these are so much fun. I look forward to these every week, and I hope our audience has as much fun listening to this as we do putting it together. And hats off for you. You're the guy that does the bones of the show, and boy, these are fun.
So remember, subscribe to our channel, like this video, drop a comment. Let us know what you think about some of these topics we've talked about. And we will do it again next week with more of the SEC Football Hour. Thanks again to Callum McAndrew for taking time joining us, talking some Missouri football earlier. And we will do it again next week. Like, subscribe. We'll talk to you next week here on the SEC Football Hour.